We begin this hour talking about people who have sex for money. Sex workers are often on the edge of society's recognition and beyond the edge of legality, since prostitution is still against the law in most places. So you can see the difficult starting point for people working to assert rights for sex workers. It's not like they can go to a government office to demand better working conditions. So that's why there is ESPLRP, alternately called the ESPLR Project. ESPLRP stands for the Erotic Service Provider Legal Educational and Research Project, based in the Bay Area. Let's hear about its work. Its president is Maxine Dugan. She's on the phone with us. Maxine, thanks for joining us today.
Good morning.
So just in general, how hard is it to convince people that sex workers have rights and should?
It's really not that hard. Once you sit down and you start talking to people, everybody starts nodding their head in the affirmative and everybody agrees. But what people are not in agreement about is exactly how to go about changing the law. You know, prostitution is criminalized on a state-by-state basis, and its enforcement is done at a local level. So there's a lot of layers of institutions and people to speak to, but most everybody's in agreement that prostitution should not be criminalized.
I noticed that in some of the research I was doing, looking at the items on your website, the fact that it's a good reminder that prostitution is not something that's against federal law. So the degrees to which it is treated can vary greatly from state to state, as you were just pointing out.
Yeah, I think that, the people we call the antis, people who are against prostitution in any or all forms, have been very successful in passing a series of laws at the federal level called anti-sex trafficking laws. Sex trafficking has been replaced as the word prostitution. And so we see laws that talk about helping sex trafficking victims, or the newest law called Fight Online Sex Trafficking, FOSTA, that was passed in April of this year, was touted as one of those laws to help sex trafficking victims. But really what it does is it took away everybody's First Amendment privacy rights, or First Amendment, right to free speech to, talk about sex acts and sex and online. So we saw the voluntary closing of platforms like Craigslist Personals, a lot of the websites that we use for advertising decided to close down. So that's caused a lot of problems for our industry. People have lost a lot of their online platforms to advertise and to contact other workers to be able to share safety information about potential customers, or, bad customers or bad actors that we have had. And so that's caused a lot of problems. And those laws are always passed under the guise of helping somebody. But of course, they're really targeted at, making our lives much more difficult.
But that's a good example of a situation in which you begin at a fundamental misunderstanding with people who want stronger laws. So how do you come back to them and say, look, we understand you want to stop people from being sex trafficked against their will, but there are some protections we want to get for our workers? Where do you start that conversation?
Well, I mean, that's a really good question, because, we have to first understand and acknowledge that the people who are passing these sex trafficking laws are really out to abolish and to erase the whole industry of prostitution. And so, when you're trying to speak to somebody on a, what you put forward as a more reasonable approach, how do we, because it's in our best interest to, stop forced labor in our own industry. Nobody wants to be in a situation where we're forced to provide, some type of service that we don't want to do. That's in our best interest to stop that activity. But, to have to really acknowledge that fundamentally the anti-prostitution people are really using the sex trafficking language as a means to try to eradicate the whole sex industry, not only prostitution. They have targeted the adult film performer, porn, which is a legal part of the sex industry. They used the anti-sex trafficking language in New Orleans this last winter to execute these raids on a bunch of the legally operating strip clubs. So they're really after shutting down the whole sex industry, not just our part of the industry. So, you know, trying to talk to people about, you know, there is a fundamental difference and we're not going away. You can't legislate us or make us illegal so much that, you know, we're going to disappear. You know, we're never going to disappear. And so it makes more sense to look at ways to enfranchise us. And, you know, we want access to equal protection under the law. So we did a survey for our Alaska group called Community United for Safety and Protection December of 2016, and we asked registered voters in Alaska if they would support, you know, decriminalizing, making our prostitution not criminal anymore. And, you know, 56% of the voters said yes, you know, that they would support that. So, you know, we think if you really ask voters about prostitution rights, they understand what it is. They understand that there is a difference. It doesn't make any sense to criminalize us. And so I think there's a lot of room there to make some basic changes in the law.
We're talking about people who work in the sex industry with Maxine Dugan, who is the president of ESPLRP, the Erotic Service Provider Legal Educational and Research Project. You can join the conversation on the exchange as we explore the concept of rights for sex workers. 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So Maxine, back up a bit and tell us how ESPLRP got started.
Well, we got started in 2009 here in San Francisco, right after we put forward the San Francisco ballot measure known as Prop K, which was to decriminalize prostitution at the city level. And it failed because we didn't have enough money to really get our message out there, because we all know that in politics, it's all about money and, you know, being able to afford your message. And many people did not want to contribute to the campaign because they were afraid that the campaign disclosure laws would somehow, you know, make them in association with prostitution, which would, excuse me, make it so that they would lose their job or lose their, you know, their children, their child custody. It could cause them to you know, lose their social standing if they were seen as somebody who financially supported a ballot measure to decriminalize prostitution. So we decided to form a nonprofit and to try the approach of bringing a lawsuit, which we did in federal court in 2015, saying that the prostitution laws in California were unconstitutional, that they violate our First Amendment, you know, free speech to negotiate for our own labor and our own safe work conditions. And they violate our right to due process, you know, that we had in our court case a plaintiff who was a man who had a disability who wanted the right to be able to purchase, you know, services to be able to negotiate for, you know, his particular needs, because that's all illegal under the prostitution laws at the state level. And because he has a disability, he has limited social engagements. And so he wanted to expand his social engagements by, you know, having that right. So the other plaintiffs we had in our court case were women who wanted to work as prostitutes. And, of course, our organization representing the right to associate. Because, like I said, being an association, you know, with prostitutes or in any way with prostitution can bring so much negative social, you know, stigma for people. So our court case went all the way to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And basically the Court of Appeals said, you know, that the states can change the law, that they can easily change the laws, that they didn't really want to rule on the merits of the case about, you know, do we really have the right to have, you know, sex or sex on any terms or sex as a privacy, you know, an act of privacy. So we're regrouping and we're going to be bringing another lawsuit against the state at the state level. because California is one of the states that has a strong privacy clause in the Constitution, the state Constitution. And we want, you know, our rights recognized under the law, under the Constitution, and we want to be able to continue our activity, you know, with some social standing.
It's interesting to hear you taking this as a First Amendment approach, because this is often the avenue that is being taken as well by religious groups for the exercise of their religion as they see fit. And so it seems like we're getting a lot of workouts on the First Amendment of late. The case you were talking about, is that Espler versus Gascon?
Yes, it is.
Okay, because I noticed that Esperb's lead attorney, I was going to say, is Louis Serkin, mentioned that this is an important issue that affects all Americans. Sex work involves all Americans?
Well, sex does.
That's fair. All right. So there was something you were about to say, though.
Oh, I was talking about, you were talking about the free speech. Mm-hmm. So how our case ended is we decided not to pursue it to the Supreme Court this summer because Anthony Kennedy stepped down. And so we felt like he would be one of our stronger allies in bringing a case, the question to the U.S. Supreme Court, because he had written an important decision in a case called Lawrence versus Texas in 2003.
This is the sodomy case, right?
That's right. And that case rested on the idea of the right to privacy, the right to sexual privacy. So we wanted to expand that privacy to specifically include sexual privacy. So Americans can have their sexual activities, whether there's money or compensation involved or not, to be recognized as protected acts, because it's not recognized currently.
We are talking to Maxine Dugan, who is the president of ESPLRP, which is the Erotic Service Provider Legal, Educational, and Research Project, and it is about securing rights for sex workers in America, and we'd like you to join the conversation. If you have some thoughts about what rights sex workers should have, if you think prostitution should stay illegal across the country, or what portions of it should be decriminalized, perhaps, as Maxine is talking about, join us on the exchange with your thoughts at 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So you talk about decriminalizing, Maxine. Are you ultimately talking about trying to push for legalization of prostitution?
So we think there's some steps to be taken here to enfranchise our population. And one of the first steps should be to decriminalize our activities. In doing so, we would like to see workers and our customers and our family and associations to be able to access equal protection under the law. We also think that there are some specific other types of policy changes that can lay the groundwork towards any legalization schemes first. We think that there has to be some anti-discrimination legislation specifically for the whole sex industry. I'm talking about things like, you know, making it illegal to strip somebody of their custodial rights, their parental rights, based on the fact that they work in the sex industry. We've seen several legally operating exotic dancers, for example, who've lost custody of their children just because they work in the sex industry. You know, they work as exotic dancers, which is legal, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've seen adult film performers lose jobs because it was found out that they had formerly, you know, put themselves through school as exotic dancers. Film performers. So that type of discrimination has to stop. You know, people have to have these social barriers that really operate in the form of stigma, but really it's a form of legal discrimination, so that, you know, people can come forward and, you know, be enfranchised and then have a seat at the table, really, to talk about any sort of legalization schemes that might affect us. Because if you just come in and, you know, implement some sort of arbitrary legalization scheme that involves, say, for example, some sort of licensing or registration, when we don't even have access to equal protection under the law, you know, people in our industry are not going to, they're going to choose to remain illegal instead of putting themselves at risk for losing their social standing in their life.
It sounds like your plan here is very similar to the plans that that went with marijuana, that for years people tried to get it decriminalized, and then, well, it's not like you're going to get medical sex here, but I think you see my point, that the idea was to lessen the penalties first and then begin to work for something more like legalization.
Yeah, I think so. But still, you know, we see and we hear a lot of people who work in the marijuana industry in some capacity feel that, you know, they're being discriminated against in their housing. You know, they're being discriminated against in other ways. So we would like to see those social protections laid down first before there's any legalization schemes that come along.
But how big a fight is that? I mean, you got people who really think that what you do is wrong and horrible and dirty and disease ridden, and, you know, you can, you know, you know the list yourself. So I mean, so these are people who are never going to consider any kind of lessening up of penalties for getting paid for sex.
Well, we disagree. You know, the when you talk to people, I talk to a lot of people. Everybody's in support. The issue is, you know, getting politicians to spend some political capital on us, which is difficult. You know, when they passed that law, that federal law that stripped everybody of their online First Amendment speech in April, you know, it was signed by, you know, all of these, U.S. congressional and Senate and the President of the United States. So we had, you know, President Trump signing legislation that Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein and, you know, Senator Kamala Harris signed on to, you know, that they liked. So we have to, you know, hold those people accountable, whereas at the local level, you see a lot of support. And in fact, your senator there in Oregon was one of the few senators who didn't vote for this bad law at the federal level in April. So Oregon can be proud of that.
Was that Merkley or Wyden?
Wyden.
Okay, Ron Wyden, Senator Ron Wyden. So we are again talking to Maxine Dugan, who is the president of ESPLRP, which is the Erotic Service Provider Legal Educational and Research Project. We're talking about rights for sex workers being sought by Maxine and her organization. And you can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned pornography earlier, and I've always been curious about this, why it is all right for pornography to be legal in the eyes of the law, but not for prostitution.
Well, that's always a great question. And, you know, that case was litigated here in California. And because you have two people who are actors who are not paying each other for the sex, that you have a third party that's paying them to have sex with each other, and there's a camera rolling, it's for production, then it's legal.
Interesting. So if you were to bring cameras and third parties to all transactions in prostitution, would that make those legal?
Well, you know, that's a production. That's a whole different story, and that's generally not the type of, you know, sex that we're having on our job. Mm-hmm. You know, we're, you know, for somebody like me who's been working in the business for, you know, 32 years, you know, I have a lot of regulars. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have established, you know, personal relationships, professional relationships with my clients. And, you know, we're not all about that. You know, that's more of the Hollywood situation, which is not exactly, you know, it's just not what we're doing. It's too big of a production for us.
I noticed with ESPLRP and similar organizations that there's some adoption of terms that have been used derogatorily in the past. For example, referring to International Whores Day, and in fact, your blog is called This Old Whorehouse, isn't it?
Yes. So, you know, a lot of us have claimed those terms. You know, I refer to myself as a prostitute. I don't really use the sex worker term so much. You know, when I was doing a bunch of signature gathering, for example, to qualify that ballot measure in San Francisco in 2008. I met many exotic dancers who didn't want to be identified as sex workers. You know, I met adult film performers who want to be called adult film performers. They don't want to be called sex workers. So, you know, you really have to have, you know, a broader term. And that's why we coined the phrase, you know, erotic service provider, because mm-hmm. it doesn't use the sex word. And people get the right to identify themselves how they want to. You know, that's part of our policy and our recommendations to legislators when we're educating them about how to approach our issue.
So in doing research, Maxina, it's the best number I could come up with was a guess that about 1 million people are involved in prostitution in the United States. but what's your better knowledge about total number of sex workers?
That's a great question. So, you know, the anti-prostitution people have been so effective that they have really gotten the U.S. government to oppose any research for our population unless it involves sex trafficking. That the U.S. government doesn't recognize our rights. The Obama administration, the Bush administration prior to that, they and the Trump administration, they all, you know, think that all prostitution is bad.
All right. So even it's hard numbers are just very difficult to come by. It's sort of like what happened with the restrictions on health research by the CDC on guns. So, all right. So obviously a bit of a battle ahead for ESPLRP, which is the Erotic Service Provider Legal Educational and Research Project. Maxine Dugan is the president of that and been in the industry for a long time. Thank you for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange to give us a bit of an education.